I think people, me included, I feel very guilty to laugh at the news because I want to laugh. I'll be watching CNN and I'll want to laugh, but then I feel guilty that I'm laughing at actually something that's happening. Right. And with everything going on, it's like, I love that this show, people, you can laugh here without guilt. You know, feel free to take that laughter and direct it towards our show. You know, because this is a guilt-free zone where you can laugh if you feel guilty laughing at the news.
Hello and welcome to The Last Laugh. My name's Matt Wilstein, and I'm a senior writer at The Daily Beast. My guest for this episode is the hilarious and talented actor, Tony Hale. You know him as Buster Bluth on Arrested Development, which just returned for what is likely its final batch of episodes on Netflix. More on that later. And he won 2 Emmys for playing Gary Walsh on Veep, which just aired its final season premiere on HBO this past Sunday night. I'm so excited for you to listen to my conversation with Tony, who I have to tell you is so different from his iconic characters in person that it's almost jarring. And that is a good thing, because Buster and Gary are both deeply awkward people, and Tony is anything but. So without further ado, this is The Last Laugh with today's guest, Tony Hale. So you were telling me before we started recording that you were just in Vegas with your Veep cast. What was that like?
I know we went, actually it was about a month ago we went, and it was so fun. We all adore each other a little too much. And we had actually just finished shooting. And I think it was probably 2 weeks later, we were like, we need to hang out again. Mm. So we went to Vegas and stayed at this place called the Nomad Hotel, which was so nice.
Yeah.
And I don't know, we just all gambled and just like ate and hung out, and we just can't get enough of each other.
Who all was there?
It was, who came? Well, Julia was shooting a movie, and so it was, let me think, it was Tim Simons and his wife, Matt Walsh and his wife, and me and my wife, and if I'm forgetting somebody, I'm going to be killed, but I think that was it.
And are you all big gamblers, or
I like a
what
slot
did you get
machine.
Into? Yeah,
there's almost like a meditative place I get into a slot machine, which is very scary. But I just like Matt and Tim liked playing blackjack, and that gives me anxiety. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. But there's something about just a slot machine that I can just stare at. However, one time I was in Vegas, and I remember going with my wife, and we were sitting next to this sweet old lady. And she had a bucket of quarters, and we were kind of, it was like 1 a.m, we started talking to her, and she says, I'm getting married in the morning. And we were like, oh my God, why are you here? And she goes, man, I've got to make the rent. And I was like, honey, we got to get to bed.
That is like dark.
That's dark, man. But it's still fun. You give yourself a limit. Like I kind of give myself like, all right, I'm going to spend $40. And if I go below that, then I'm done, you know?
That's pretty conservative, I would say.
I try it. I want to thank you for giving me the microphone that's yellow, because that's my favorite color.
Oh,
I appreciate that. You did some research on me.
Yeah, I did. Your watch is yellow, I see.
And my watch is yellow.
Yeah, it matches your watch. That's the listeners can't see that, but you could imagine it.
It's amazing.
So, yeah, for you guys, Veep is over, but for the viewers, it's kind of just beginning this final season.
Yeah.
So what was it like getting back to the show after, because I know you had a longer break than usual, so what was it kind of like getting back with everybody and back into Gary?
It's always fun. This was bittersweet, because we... again, not to kind of gush, but we care about each other so much. We have such a good time together. And knowing this was the last season was like, that stings.
Yeah.
However, it was also like, it was both bittersweet and incredibly joyous because of what Julia had just walked through with her own journey, her own health journey. And and so we were all very happy to be back together. And also excited to see how Dave Mandel was going to wrap up the show. And it's pretty satisfying. So, I don't know, but each time an episode went by, we were like, we got 3 more. We got 2 more. We got 1 more. And then we just all just cried on that last episode.
Yeah, I mean, you were delayed, as you alluded to, because of Julie Louis-Dreyfus' illness. She had breast cancer, and I know has just, said that she's cancer-free, so that's really great. As someone who's worked so closely with her now for many years, I mean, what was it like for you to kind of watch her go through that and not really know, what was going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's always, it was, it's never, I mean, I think it's always hard to watch a friend walk through that, but at the same time, it was so inspiring. I guess, I mean, not to sound cliche, but so inspiring to watch her attitude through it, because it wasn't, obviously she's a fighter, but she does that fighting with humor,
mm-hmm.
and always thinking forward, never letting it get her. I mean, of course it gets you down, but she always just kept going. And I think that's, because the thing, I mean, it's just tough, man. I mean, it's, she never allowed herself to spiral.
Yeah.
And it would be, when you're faced with that kind of a challenge, I mean, it's really tough to stay positive. And she made a daily choice to do that.
You know, at the beginning of this new season, how do you feel like, since there has been some time that's gone by, how do you feel like Gary's relationship with Selena has evolved or changed since we last saw him or even yeah. since the beginning of the series?
I mean, unfortunately for him, but fortunately for me as someone who's performing it, it hasn't changed much.
Mm-hmm.
It has actually gotten, well, it has changed. It's just gotten worse. And I've seen a picture of codependence get sicker and sicker and sicker.
Mm-hmm.
The first season, I remember I was asked to break up with her boyfriend for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, oh, wow, this is that's a level of codependence I've never experienced, you know, I've never seen. And then when it gets worse and I'm asked to throw, you know, there's like this secret that happened between us on Labor Day and nobody knows about it. And something dark happened. And then I see how many kind of things, how abusive she is over the years, and how just like a dog returning to its vomit, I go back, you know, and it's like, and it's just like almost like an abusive spouse. Like I just have no recollection of how abusive she was to me. I just kind of bounce back in a very unhealthy way. So you kind of, I see new, more and more levels of the dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just, it's fun to play. But for him, you're just like, wow, that he's going to wake up one day and realize, where was 25, 30 years of my life where I was just empty of myself, but just serving this monster.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if he's ever going to have that awakening.
Yeah. The thing that struck me watching the first few episodes of the new season is how kind of gossipy they are with each other now, and how kind of there's a closeness between them that even that I think is different from that, you know, sadness that you're describing or darkness that you're describing. So it's almost, there is a kind of fun to it for him too, it seems.
Yeah. And he really cares about her. And I think she cares about him, but she never really wants to admit it.
Mm-hmm.
I think she never really wants to open that part inside of her. So she's just, her default is always to be abusive or always to see him as less than her and all this kind of stuff. But the way she depends on him, you can really see that there's a deep need for him in her life.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because there have been, you know, obviously some people making, you know, comparisons between Selena Meyer and Donald Trump.
Yeah.
If you've ever thought about whether there is a Gary of Trump world, someone who is that loyal to the president in the same way that Gary is to Selena.
I know Gary wouldn't survive in the Trump administration. I think there's something about, I don't know if, because there's a lot, well, I mean, I can't speak to that. I don't know. I know that with Gary, I think there's a lot of mother issues going on. And mm-hmm. so he kind of stays because there's so much pain in him of like his own mom, I think. And so she's replaced that. And so he's trying to work that out with her. With Trump, I don't know. I don't know where that would go. But again, here's the thing. Selena puts up with Gary because he's pretty absent-minded. I don't know if Trump, I mean, I think Trump would, like he does everybody, I think he would fire him after 2 days.
Yeah, but he would appreciate the sort of undying loyalty of Gary that goes beyond everyone else in Selena's circle. You know, everyone else we see insult her behind her back and all that. And Gary we really never see that from him, that he's just this, you know, purely loyal
and it's
servant.
Also blasphemy if anybody talks about her.
Right.
Like you do not speak of his God like that. Like Selena is his God, and it's, if you ever say anything cross about her, he will just immediately defend her, you know, or just laugh it off. But I remember, I think it was the end of the fourth season when she did not end up becoming president. And he was so furious at her team of the missed opportunity, because they had gold in their hands that mm-hmm. That was so ready to be delivered to the country, and they fucked it up, you know? And it's like, how could you have that opportunity and miss it? I mean, you guys are idiots. And so he was incredibly passionate about that.
Yeah, he really believes that she would be a great president.
Oh, he doesn't understand why the country hasn't handed her the presidency. She's the obvious queen.
Yeah.
You know, she's the obvious choice to run the country. And that's what I love about just how, because anytime me as Tony would question, how does this guy stick around? Like, how does he not see this? But I think there are so many situations in life where I won't give details, but there are friends of mine or where they're so blinded to how somebody is treating them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wait, do you not see this? This is, all of your friends are seeing this. And they're like, no, they'll change. They'll come around. They do this a lot, da 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 da. And you're like, no, this is abuse. Like, this is happening. But they're just completely blinded to it, you know?
Do you think it makes it easier for you to play it because it is Julia and she is such a likable and, you know, hilarious person despite the awful character that she's playing?
Well, yeah, and that's the talent of Julia is she can do this monster, but then you just want to keep watching. And it's so much of it is her timing and how she can turn things so quickly. My favorite thing with her is just all the subtleties that we can have between each other. You know, I'm going to miss that. Like, there was this one scene this last year where I was getting her ready for the day and I was kind of helping her put on her shoes and zipping up her dress and getting her stuff. And it was this like, it became a dance mm-hmm. where she expected something from me. I knew that she expected something from me and I was right there to catch her purse, or I was right there to hand her something or put on her shoes. And when we did it three or four times, I was like, oh, I want to keep doing this. And it's like, it became its own comic dance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I those kind of little things I'm really, really going to miss, because it's fun to do those together.
How has that changed since the first season of the show? I mean, were you intimidated by her more at that point? I mean, she wasn't someone that you knew well, I assume, yeah. when you started.
No, I had met her. The ironic thing is she did a guest spot on Arrested Development where she played the blind lawyer.
Oh, yes.
Maggie Leiser. Yeah. And on two separate occasions, somebody asked each of us if we worked together on Arrested Development. And both of us separately said, no, we didn't have any scenes together. And then someone sent us a screenshot of us in a scene together speaking to each other. So clearly we made no impact on each other's lives back then. But I know we had met. But another thing that Julia, a gift that she gives to her cast, is she is just incredibly grounded. And so she does not, there's not a hierarchy set when you meet her. She's a team player. And so that's what's a bummer about this business many times is there's a lot of arrogance. There's a lot of entitlement. There's a lot of like, okay, who's number one on the call sheet? And that person, you know, whatever, has everything or whatever. But many times that kind of pride or selfishness can just suck creative energy out of a space. And everybody's walking around on eggshells around the star. Julia's just the opposite. Like, she really created this family environment. So we all felt we were not intimidated. We were all just like, hey, we're all in this together. Let's make a fun show.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I always think about with her in this show is the episode where she did the whole thing from bed, which I believe was her idea, because she just wanted to do an episode from bed. What do you remember about that?
Is that when I was sick? Is that when Gary was sick?
I'm trying to remember. She was, maybe you both were sick, but she was in bed and you weren't.
Yeah, I think because there was, let me think a minute. Oh, yes. Because there was two times, I think it was season three, where she took too much St. John's wort and she got kind of drugged up
mm-hmm.
and she became very positive and she told Gary everything he wanted to hear
right.
because his 40th birthday was coming up and she's like, I can't wait to go home with you and dance all night. And Gary's like, This is my nirvana. I'm having an out-of-body experience. And then obviously she sobered up and was just like, you're an asshole, and what was I saying? But Gary was just holding on to those words. But there was also another time when Gary was sick, and it was such a beautiful picture of our relationship, because she had good intentions that she wanted to be seen as someone who was serving her servant. Mm-hmm. So she chopped up a chicken sandwich in the refrigerator and threw it over just like old pasta.
Yeah.
And then delivered it to me in bed. And I was like, and I was trying to put on a good face. And I said, is there blue cheese in there? And she's like, no, there's no blue cheese. And it was obviously mold. But then she goes on to tell me how the chef made her this gorgeous poached salmon and all this stuff while I'm eating this just like disgusting meal. But her intention was like, she wants to be seen this, but then she just cannot play it out. She can't act it out because she's, you know, just the worst.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This looks delicious. Kid. What is it?
Oh, I cut up a chicken sandwich and I put it into pasta.
What? Is this the chicken sandwich that was in the fridge before the hospital? Wow, and you left the bun on it when you cut it.
Well, you don't have to finish it if you don't think it's...
No, I can't wait to swirl my fork in there and get in. Let me see.
Smells sort of funky, though, no?
That's the blue cheese.
No, but there isn't any blue cheese in it.
And the fact that she made it for you made you want to eat it, of course.
And her, she would constantly say like, well, I did this for you. Do you not see this? Do you not see this? And he's like, oh, yes, of course. Thank you so much. While he's like, you know, having a virus in his stomach because of the chicken.
The new season is sort of corresponding with the start of the Democratic primary for 2020.
Oh yeah.
And there's a lot of parallels in the season about that, and she's, you know, running against various different candidates who are jumping in the race, and another candidate seems to be coming on, you know, even like multiple per episode.
Right.
Do you think there's anything that the Democratic candidates can learn from watching this final season of Veep?
That's a tough one. I think one thing that I think Veep prides itself on is you never really know which party she's in. And the show really, yes, it's about politics, but it's really also just about office politics, about everybody's trying to just get ahead, and they'll stab whoever they have to get ahead, and just all the pretty much high school behavior that happens in that situation. So I don't know if there's any tips that can be learned from our show, because all you see is just people just at their worst. I think what gets me the most excited about Veep is is in the political climate that we're in right now, with, you know, all this stuff that's happening. I think people, me included, I feel very guilty to laugh at the news because I want to laugh. I'll be watching CNN and I'll want to laugh, but then I feel guilty that I'm laughing at actually something that's happening.
Right.
And with everything going on, it's like, I love that this show, people, you can laugh here without guilt. You know, feel free to take that laughter and direct it towards our show. You know, because this is a guilt-free zone where you can laugh if you feel guilty laughing at the news. So I don't recommend any politicians taking tips from our show, but like, you can use it as an outlet.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talk over the course, you know, of the past few years with this show that it's perhaps become harder to make a show like this, a political show like this, funny because everything in real life is so over the top. Have you noticed that? Do you feel like the show has gotten more outrageous in response to the times, or any way that it's kind of reacted to the reality that's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dave Mandela has talked about this a lot, but it's like you almost can't try to compete with what's happening, you know, or it's just it's too insane to try and compete with it. So it's all about just trying to do your own story and her story. I mean, the fact is, if the Veep writers, and I've mentioned this before, but if the Veep writers wrote a character like Donald Trump 2 or 3 years or 4 years ago, HBO would have been like, no, that character's way too broad.
Mm-hmm.
That's no one is going to believe that. And then you see something being lived out in life and you're like, oh wow, that's not a television show. You know, that's actually happening. So it's, and then we've also done stories, where of course I'm blanking on all of them, but like we've done a story and then like months later, we'll see something similar to that come out in the news. And then the writer's like, maybe we should stop writing because we don't want to, you know, for this stuff to come true.
Predict the future. Yeah. Coming up after the break, Tony breaks down how he uses his anxiety to bring Buster Bluth and Gary Walsh to life. So, you know, obviously it was a long time, a long break between seasons on Veep now, but that was nothing compared to the very long break that you had between the original Arrested Development run and then the return on Netflix a few years ago. And you've now been playing Buster Bluth for, I want to say, more than 15 years, maybe 16 years.
Yeah, yeah.
What is it like to age with a character like that?
Well, it's fun to be able to step back into his shoes.
Mm-hmm.
When we first came back, I think it was season four, when Netflix first brought Arrested back, I had a hesitancy about doing it because there was just a lot of expectation, you know, of kind of people, because it became more beloved after it ended. And so people really, really, really loved it, which I think is great. But, you know, you kind of don't know if you can match that expectation. And I didn't know if I would be able to, I don't know, get back into what people were expecting. And then I remember hearing Jessica Walter's voice, who played Lucille, say Buster. And she just goes, Buster. And it was this kind of like Pavlovian, like, oh, okay, I'm back. You know, it was like my chin went back, my arms went back. You know, it was just kind of this... And it's like a muscle memory thing kicked in. But I go back to Mitch Hurwitz and also, you know, Dave Mandel on Veep. It really is the framework that the writers give you. What happened with Buster, and it's always exciting to read a new script and be like, all right, so what adventure is he on? And that's where that is very comforting for an actor, because you do step into a show and you're like, oh, I don't know if I can pull this off. But then you see the framework they give you. And it's like, oh, okay, now I see where he's what's happening and how to do this. And, you know, hopefully I can do it that they're satisfied.
I'm so curious what it's like to read an Arrested Development script, because there is just so much going on in these episodes and the time jumps and the, you know, parallels and things happening. So are you able to read those scripts and kind of see it, or does it take, is it not until you actually see it that you kind of understand how it all fits together?
I was doing I think it was this year's Sundance. I was doing something, and I was doing a podcast in front of an audience, and we were talking about Buster and Arrested Development. And this was like 15 or 16 years after this joke happened. But I remember talking about when Buster's hand was taken off and he was in the hospital, and the doctor came out. And I said to the audience, and I said, oh, and one of my favorite jokes is when the doctor said he's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And it was and then they're like, oh, great. And then he goes, but his hand was eaten off by a seal. And it's turned. And somebody in the audience said, no, it's that he's going to be all right. The doctor said he's going to be all right. And it hit me 15 years later that he's saying he's going to be all right. He's only going to have a right hand. And I was like, well, damn it. I didn't get that joke until 15 years later, and I was in the show. And that's actually my character. So there's so many things that I just have still to this day I have not gotten, you know? So it's kind of just like, it's always I'm always unfolding new surprises.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think it did make a lot of sense for it to go to Netflix, where people can watch it over and over again. Whereas I remember, you know, I watched the show, I was in college when it started, and we would watch it on, you know, every week. And me and my friends were just obsessed with the show, but you would watch it and then you just wait a week and, you know, we never saw that episode again.
Right.
And you kind of have to remember what happens, and they do a little recap, but
yeah.
But it wasn't that long ago, and it feels like a totally different world.
And it's very, I just have such admiration for Mitch because it's a really, both actually Veep and they're very dense shows.
There's yeah.
And I think at the time when Arrested started, people were used to a dense show when it came to like a crime show or something that it's almost like we all, the audience had, was used to kind of trying to think of who did the murder, who solved the crime, like what. But when it comes to comedy, no one really, they weren't used to having to think that much with comedy. It was just kind of very much like you were told when to laugh, you know, they were very multicams, mm-hmm. which is a great thing. But this was a very new thing where you really had to pay attention. Like, now, what are the blue hands on the wall? Oh, yeah, he was in the Blue Man. That was one of my favorite jokes, by the way, that Tobias joined the Blue Man group thinking it was a support group for depressed men.
Yeah.
And that, I just think, God, that's freaking brilliant, you know? But then you would have to track, like, okay, so he's feather bottom this time? You know, yeah. Just all this stuff, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. I mean, you've played these two really iconic roles in Gary and Buster. And I think maybe they share some qualities
oh, yeah.
with each other. Yeah. How do you think they're similar and different, and how do you approach each one?
Well, I think there's definitely an anxiety. There's a through line of anxiety in their life. I think approaching them. I mean, Buster is more in a state of paralysis all the time. Like he just gets paralyzed by fear, and he's also always so overwhelmed. Like anything that happens, he's just constantly overwhelmed, and so he's just looking at life, just wondering what's going to come at him. But then he has these moments of joy. But he's so. I remember Mitch telling me that all Buster wants in life is safety,
mm-hmm.
and it really everything I did it really helped that this if he gets freaked out because his safety is threatened, whereas Gary. All he wants is the love of Selena. And so I would always use that like to in everything I did. And that's why, you know, she would scream at him, but it's like, no, I just want her. I mean, he would, it's almost it's so sick that if she were to hit Gary, it's him. It's like, well, at least she's giving me affection. At least she's touching me,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he just was so desperate for her to see him. And for him to feel seen by her, you know, and just to, yeah, that. Whereas Buster didn't, he loved his mother, but didn't, if it affected his, he would choose safety over his mother. You mm-hmm. know, he'd never really, he just wanted to be safe.
You've talked about how you channel your personal anxiety into your characters,
mm-hmm.
but I'm curious, how does that work? How does that sort of manifest?
I think a picture of anxiety many times is like if you see like a cartoon of someone very, very nervous or very, very anxious. And even though Buster and Gary have had these moments, but it's very broad. It's like someone freaking out mm-hmm. or someone like the Tasmanian devil, like, I can't do this. Da, da, da.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my anxiety in my life is a very internal battle.
Right.
And it's something of managing my anxiety and not living in the what if. Trying to be present, realizing that these scenarios I'm creating in my head are fictional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with Buster and Gary, so much of it is just, it's a very internal fight. Like there's a lot going on in their heads. There's mm-hmm. a lot going on in their heads. So they'll be, like Gary will be standing behind Selena and he was called, in the season, I think he was called a bitchy mime once because it's so much, he can't really speak much,
mm-hmm.
but so a lot of it is nonverbal. And so there's a lot going on in his head. And I grew up loving like Bob Newhart mm-hmm. and Tim Conway. And it's almost like there was so much chaos going on in their lives, but they lived in the tension. They just would find that I would just watch them and they would just live in this very tense space. And I feel like that for me, many times that's how my anxiety is. It's like you're kind of learning how to live in the tension of life and kind of sometimes managing the highs and lows. And so that's, I felt like Gus, especially Gary would have to do that a lot,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, you'd been acting for a while before Arrested Development came along. What did that mean for you, and sort of how did it change your life?
Dramatically changed kind of the course of where I was going, but I was doing I was doing commercials for a very long time in New York, and I really enjoyed doing commercials. I was always the guy, I mean, not much different than what I'm doing now, but I was always the quirky guy who wasn't all there. That was kind of my type. And just kind of wide-eyed and kind of dumb. And not dumb, but just kind of like, you know, checked out. And so, and I was really enjoying it. And then, however, I was having a very, very hard time finding a TV and film agent. And it was like the last 2 years I found this manager who really took a chance on me. And that's when the Arrested Development audition came. However, when I got Arrested Development, and I kind of get on a soapbox about this a lot, I learned a lot of lessons from that, because that was my dream. And I had a moment when I got it, when it didn't satisfy me the way I thought it was going to satisfy me. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this a lot, and I enjoy talking about this, because I think I got my dream and it scared me because it didn't satisfy me the way I thought it was going to satisfy me. And it's because I think that whole time in New York, even though I was enjoying commercials, I was always looking to this big thing of getting a sitcom. I was like, I want a sitcom. And I just was never very present in my life. And it's that whole thing, if you're not practicing contentment where you are, you're not going to be content when you get what you want. And I got what I wanted, but since I had not been practicing being present, I gave it too much weight, and nothing can match that weight.
Yeah.
And since then, and after that, my daughter was born. And one thing children, having a baby does, is it forces you to be present, because you have to keep it alive.
Yeah.
And I really began to wake up to like, wow, those first 3 years of Arrested, I was really overwhelmed, because I was the whole time thinking, I should be feeling something differently. And it's because I had just never been very present in my life. And so, you know, over the course of a lot of therapy and having time to dissect that, it's really woken me up to like just the many ways of kind of being present. And I wrote this children's book about it, and called Archibald's Next Big Thing, where he's always focusing on the next thing, and this bee travels around with him, and it's like, hey, you got to just be, man. And it starts off, he gets this card in the mail that says, your big thing is here. And he's like, where? And he goes on all these adventures. But every time he's on a new adventure, he's like, I got to get to my next big thing. The bee's like, you got to just be, man. And he realizes the card is right, that your big thing is right here. Like, my big thing right now is me talking to you on this podcast. Mm-hmm. That's my big thing. And the more that I can get into that practice, then everything else just kind of unfolds. Life is still crazy, but I'm not giving all this stuff out there so much weight. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just turned into like, but it's like, it was a big lesson for me, and yeah. I'm still learning, and I still struggle with it. And I think I talk about it so much because I suck at it. Like it's something I have to always remind myself about.
Yeah. I mean, especially I would think in acting, being present is very important, or when you would have to be doing any improv on Veep or something like that. I mean, does that help you stay present to do that kind of work?
It does. And it does when you this is why I appreciate Veep so much, is we have such a care for each other, and we're so supportive of each other, that you feel taken care of. Like when I'm doing something, I'm not in my head going, is this funny? Is this not funny? Should I do it? Should I not do it? You just kind of do it. You just try it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But you kind of tried it in the moment. And you're not met with, that's not funny, or that didn't work, or da-da-da. It's like everybody's in an experimental stage,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I just so value that, you know? Because you got to like just try it. And if it might work, it might not. But in the moment, just throw it out there. Rather than what I typically would have done of like, oh, I'm not going to even try that because I've already dissected the entire thing in my head and it's going to bomb.
Coming up, Tony reveals why he thinks Arrested Development is finally over for good. And yes, we do talk about that infamous New York Times interview. So with Arrested Development, I think the perpetual question is will there be more? Because there has been more again and again over these years.
Right.
I think that was complicated a bit with everything that was going on with Jeffrey Tambor, and especially after that New York Times interview that that we all got to read and hear that made a lot of news last year.
It's a very amorphous process, this sort of bullshit that we do, you know, making a fake life. It's a weird thing, and it is a breeding ground for atypical behavior, and certain people have certain processes.
That doesn't mean it's acceptable. And no, the point is that things are changing, and people need to respect each other differently.
That I just realized in this conversation, I have to let go of being angry at him. He never crossed the line on our show with any, you know, sexual whatever. Verbally, yes, he harassed me, but he did apologize. I have to let it go, and I have to give you a chance to you know, for us to be friends again.
Absolutely.
But it's hard because, honestly, Jason says this happens all the time. In, like, almost 60 years of working, I've never had anybody yell at me like that on a set. And it's hard to deal with it, but I'm over it now. I just let it go right here for the New York Times.
She didn't give it up for anybody else.
You personally apologized to Jessica Walter, and I can read what you said. You said, "Regardless of my intentions, it is clear that my words, both said and unsaid, serve to minimize Jessica's pain, and for that I am extremely sorry." How do you think about that now? I mean, the way that played out so publicly, and just what did you learn from that experience?
I mean, I think it really comes down to I've had two really great TV families,
mm-hmm.
and I love both of them. I love my Arrested Development family. We all learned a lot, and we're continuing to learn. But I really, really care about Jessica, and we really care about each other. So that was definitely, that was just something we all kind of learned from.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you had already shot most of these most recent episodes when that happened, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of your scenes are with Jeffrey this second half of the new season. I mean, did you feel like you recognized this man that she was talking about and that some of his other, you know, co-stars have talked about?
Here's the thing. I guess I wasn't I wasn't in the other show, so I can't speak mm-hmm. to that.
Yeah.
But I can speak to my experience with Jeffrey, and I do love him. I love mm-hmm. him a lot, and I think he's an incredibly talented man. But I can't speak to that other story because I wasn't
understand.
Involved in that.
Can you see the show Arrested Development continuing after this? I mean, what do you think will happen?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's been. There's been many years when I'm like, oh yeah, we're done. And then it kind of, you know, it surprises you and it pops up again. I mean, I would be surprised if it continued.
Mm-hmm.
I would be very surprised.
Because?
Well, I think it's just, I think the way it ended, I think not necessarily what you're talking about, but just the series, the how he wrote it, how mm-hmm. it ended. It's been, I don't know, just story-wise, I don't know how it would continue. But mm-hmm. maybe. I mean, again, this business is so surprising. I mean, there's so many things that have popped up that I'm like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. So, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So obviously Veep is ending. It sounds like Arrested might be ending. I mean, is that liberating for you as an actor, someone who's been on these shows for so long? Is it scary? How do you kind of think about how to move forward?
I think I go back to, I mean, I'm trying to learn from that chicken of just kind of being present.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually became a cartoon that's going to be in the fall. Archibald's the children's book.
Yeah, that's great.
And
that's
now
that's with Netflix too, right?
It's Netflix, and now he's a very present chicken,
mm-hmm.
and he sees the best in people, and he just doesn't judge, and he always is positive, and yes ands his way through life, and I don't know. It's a model that I would like to follow, you know, because mm-hmm. I think it's very easy to live. we're in a business, and you are as well as a freelancer. It's you don't go up to a dentist and say, "Oh, what are you doing next?" Because everybody expects, it's not like he's going to go, "Oh, I'm doing this molar." You know, it's just no one really, everybody kind of expects like he'll be a dentist.
Yeah.
Whereas freelancers, people, you always get that question, what's next? And so it's actually more of a challenge for me to stay present. And so I think I'm just going to continue practicing that.
Well, not to make you look into the future too much, but what are there things that you really want to do? I mean, is drama something that you've thought about as something that you want to do after doing much comedy?
We were talking earlier about South by Southwest, I was able to do this movie called Sadie, and then at this past Sundance, I was able to do a movie called To the Stars and play very, very different characters than what, you know, people might know me for. And then like this Toy Story coming up, he's a spork, and it's just like, it's so fun to kind of play the different stuff. I do get that question a lot, and it's like, it's always, I'm just excited to get the opportunity. I mean, it's like, if somebody wants me to, it's like, great, let's do it. Yeah. You know?
Well, you'll have more time. You're more available now with these shows ending.
Yeah. But it's been fun, 'cause it's this cartoon is, it's a lot. This is my first venture into animation, and it's a lot of work, but it is so life-giving. And just to be able to create all these stories for Archibald, that's just been an absolute joy. And he's also yellow. He's yellow, which I love. He also reminds me a little bit of Beaker, who is my favorite character in The Muppet Show.
Oh, yeah. Why was he your favorite character?
I don't know. He's kind of like a Gary on Veep, where he would just always have these hilarious facial reactions, and he would just kind of go, meh, 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 and he wasn't able to talk. So you just saw the panic in his eyes. So I really, I don't know. I just always thought he was funny.
You mentioned Toy Story 4. I just saw the trailer for that came out today while we're talking. And you're playing Forky, who's Forky, kind of the new big character in the Toy Story world. Mm-hmm. What was it like kind of going into that world and working with all those guys?
Oh my gosh. It's such an honor, man. It's one of the things, like, you don't realize when they offered it to me and said, we'd like to read this, of course you're like, yes, are you kidding? Mm-hmm. And I've seen all the movies, I mean, and all that stuff, but it doesn't really hit you until I see like a trailer like today, or I see the poster and my character's on there, and I'm like, oh, I am a part of this, you know? So it's, and he's just a really, he's just really fun to do. And it's not even just the movie. It's like to meet all the creators, you know, Josh Cooley, all these guys who have been a part of the Toy Story franchise, and to know that Josh Cooley also did Inside Out, which I just think one of the most brilliant animated films.
Totally.
And so I just to be able to meet those guys and see and just, you know, fawn over them, that's been really pretty awesome.
Did you get to work with Tom Hanks directly, or,
no,
or
I,
do you record separately, or how does that work?
The last time I recorded, he was before me, and I came out and chatted with him a little bit. He's such a nice guy, but that's even I'm like, oh, you just recorded Woody, and I'm about to be, you know, just like, what's happening right now? Can somebody just tell me what's happening? So it was just pretty cool.
So before we wrap up, one thing that I like to do is kind of go through some of your credits that we didn't get to talk about. And
sure.
You, I think you have a very interesting early career. You mentioned commercials before you did Arrested Development, but you also appeared on some of the most iconic TV shows of the 90s, which people might not know. So what I want to do is kind of go through some of these and see if you have any memories that jump out or stories or just sort of what the first thing that comes to mind when you think about these these projects. So you were on Dawson's Creek. What was your role on that, and what do you remember from that experience?
I don't remember a lot. I mean, that was almost 20 years ago. I know I was a doctor. That was one of my first gigs. I was living in, I just moved to New York, but I had lived in Virginia for a while before then, and Dawson's Creek shot in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I remember when I was living in Virginia, we would drive like 5 hours for a role on Dawson's Creek. And so, and it was like for a one line thing, but everybody so badly wanted to be on Dawson's Creek. Well, anyways, I got this doctor role. I was super excited. And then I remember really thinking, oh, maybe like James Vanderbeek and I will be buddies. And then I said something really, really stupid, I think, and he just probably, but he's such a nice guy, but you know, I'm sure I was just a weirdo.
Another show people might not remember that you were on is The Sopranos, which has been talked about recently because it had a big anniversary and everyone's kind of been going back and rewatching The Sopranos and talking about
it. Is it the 20th? Is it the 20th?
I wasn't going to say because I wasn't sure, but yeah, I think it might be the 20th anniversary. So what was that experience like? I mean, did you kind of know at that point that must have been a big deal, that show, you know, getting a role on that show?
It was a very, when I was living in New York, it was a huge hit, and I remember just auditioning, and I was Uncle Junior's nurse oncologist.
There's a theme here, doctor, nurse.
Doctor, nurse. And I was giving him his cancer treatment or his chemotherapy. And again, I remember sitting in my dressing room from that, right on the stages, and it was at Silver Cup Studios in Queens. And I remember sitting in my room and thinking, keep your shit together, Hale. Just keep it together. And just kind of walking out and doing it. I remember I had to deal with a needle, not a real needle, but looked like I was giving him something. And I was like, just please don't shake. Just please don't let your hand shake, because the last thing you need is a nurse oncologist whose hands shake. And thankfully, I guess they didn't.
And then finally, Sex and the City was the other big HBO show of that time. So those were two eight big HBO projects pre-Veep. What was that one like?
I was the character Tiger, and I was the photographer's assistant to the guy who was taking nude photos of Kim Cattrall's character. And I think what I remember from that is going up to Kim and apologizing that I had to stare at her all day. Because I felt bad. I just kind of had to stare at her. And she wasn't fully naked, but I felt bad about it. And I went up to her. And I think she thought I was a freak. So I've had a lot of other things where people think I'm a little off, and that was one of them.
Have you run into any of the people that you worked with on those shows in the years since? And did
no,
they remember
I've never
you?
Run into Kim Cattrall. I've run into James Vanderbeek, and we laughed about me being an ass to him. And then nobody from The Sopranos. No.
And then the last thing is what's the last thing that made you laugh really hard? It could be a movie, a TV show, something in real life, anything that you can think of that made you laugh hard.
There is, okay. I'm so glad you asked this, because I watched this one little snippet on loop. There's a show called Characters on Netflix where these different comic actors will do different characters. And there's this actress named Kate Berlant. She is so funny. And she plays this character where she's like this hoity-toity artist in New York. And there's this scene where John Early is coming in and he's playing her assistant. And he comes in to drop off her dry cleaning. And she's laying on the floor in like this really pretentious, like trying to get into her energy or whatever like that, this playing this artist character. And she sits up and scares him. And he lets out this scream that is so organically terrified and is so, it is the funniest thing. And my wife and I press that 10-second back thing or whatever you do on Netflix over and over and over, because it is such a real scream that is so hilarious. So I encourage everybody to watch that on loop, because it is so funny.
All right. Well, Tony, thank you so much for doing this today. And hopefully I'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much to Tony Hale for being my guest today on The Last Laugh. You can see him in all 5 seasons of Arrested Development on Netflix right now, and on the final season of Veep, which airs every Sunday night at 10:30 p.m. on HBO and can be streamed on HBO Go and HBO Now. This June, you can hear him as Forky in Toy Story 4. If you enjoy the show, please tell your friends and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. The Last Laugh is distributed by Himalaya Media for The Daily Beast. It is produced by Jason Smith for Starburns Audio and Scott Porch for Himalaya Media, and our engineer is Mackenzie Mazzell.
Our music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find the show every week on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.